This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Now, it's the Michael K. Show podcast.
The big story today, obviously, the Jets' acquisition of Antonio Cromartie. And we're lucky enough to have the guy who engineered that deal and has done such a great job in his role as the general manager of the Jets. And that's Mike Tannenbaum. And Mike joins us now. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Give me your thought process behind acquiring Cromartie. Why did you like him and why did you go after him?
Well, really for a few reasons. Being around Rex for a year, understanding how important, depth at the corner position is. We still have strong feelings for Drew Coleman and Dwight Lowry. Over the 16-game season, all these guys will play. Rex likes to play man-to-man. That's no secret, Mike. And we felt that a corner, we either were going to make this trade or we were going to take a corner with the 29th pick. So to give ourselves as much flexibility going into the draft, we just felt like the value was there. We understand there has been some inconsistency and some issues in the past, but, Antonio's still a young man, and we think he has a chance to really help us out, and then we could go into the draft with the 29th pick, and whatever happens, happens.
Well, at the end of the playoff run by the Jets, a lot of people said they needed somebody, an extra man in that secondary, so you guys obviously put the focus on Cromartie. Again, why Cromartie, though, Mike? Why did you like him? What did you see from him that said, I want to get this guy on the Jets?
His length, his ability to play man-to-man were really critical for us in terms of, the way what we want to do defensively, and his strengths really matched up well. Again, very good man-to-man player, and he's been very productive, great athlete, and we want to get back to the level where he was 2 years ago, and we think in our defense, and I think we have a good support system. I think Antonio has a chance to play really well for us.
Now let's talk about what they say, that he wore out his welcome in San Diego. I don't know, Mike, what that exactly means. I don't know even if it's fair, but the guy, I guess, has, you could say a sketchy background. They say that he's the type of kid that might be immature. Did you see any of that? Did that send up red flags? Are you worried about that at all?
Sure. We understand that there's risk in this deal, Mike. I think all those points are fair, and I know he's going to be coming on himself in a few minutes, and I'm sure Antonio could address them better than I could. From our perspective, we did a lot of research on him, and we just felt that the price and the risk was very reasonable given the upside of the player. And again, I really believe in our organization. We have a great support staff. Not unlike someone like Chris Jenkins. I think Chris and Carolina came to a situation where, it was probably better for both sides to go in different directions. And, obviously we're pleased with the result of that. And, we just look at this, Mike, as an opportunity. And hopefully San Diego feels like they got good value. And we're really excited to add him to our secondary.
Do you look at also when you're dealing with a guy like this? And again, I say that and I don't know what type of guy he is. I think it's almost unfair to be saying that. But when you hear stories about a guy, when you have a coach like Rex, do you try to match that up and say, I think Rex has the skill set to deal with a guy like Antonio?
Yeah, and I think that goes back to really a lot of credit that, goes to Woody Johnson, because a year ago when we wanted to hire Rex, one of the strengths we saw in him was his innate ability to really relate to everybody, from ownership to the last free agent to the media. And, Rex had a great talk with Antonio, and obviously, that's just one conversation, but, Rex's, long track record of relating to all different types of people, gave, Woody and I great comfort in making this trade.
Now, we said that at the end of the playoffs, the Jets wanted to improve the secondary. So what more do you want to do? Obviously, you could still make trades, and you're a little hamstrung, a good thing, because you were in the Final Four, so free agency is not really that much of an option. So what else are you looking for to improve, Mike?
Well, certainly running back, we're going to see how that situation unfolds. But I'll say this, it's a long off season. If you go back a year ago, we added, Ben Hartsock, who really helped us become the number one rushing team in the league in August. And we added Braylon Edwards in September, and we wound up going to the AFC championship game. So we'll look for opportunities all the way through the season up until the trading deadline. And, today's just day one, and, we're excited about what we started with, but we got a lot of work to do. And I just want to be in a position, Mike, that if opportunities present themselves, we can act on them. And now going to the draft at 29, we'll be, you know, we'll see what happens, but we can really maximize that opportunity now. We're not going to say, like, well, we have to take a corner here. If there's a better football player, like last year in the third round with Sean Green, you know, we could go ahead and do that.
You know, one thing that you do, Mike, and a lot of people in football don't, I think it's kind of neat that you roll the dice like this. A lot of football people are loathe to trade draft picks. They look at them like gold nuggets, and I'm sure you do as well. Was it hard to pull the trigger on this? Because if Cromartie plays really well, this could be a two. How much do you value those picks?
Yeah, a lot, but it goes back to really like what Coach Parcells taught me, which is you have, you know, very limited ways to improve your team. And, you know, again, you know, giving up a third that could be a two, you know, the price is not insignificant, but, you know, 25-year-old corners with this type of ability is hard to find. So we weren't going to find them in the third round in 2011, I can assure you that. And that's really what made us feel good about it. Now, you know, a lot's going to happen between now and then, and we'll see how this trade pans out. And I appreciate the fact that there is risk, but, you know, to pull the trigger here, at the end of the day, we felt like the risk and the price was a reasonable one to take.
One more question about Cromartie for me, Mike. His interceptions have gone down precipitously over the last 3 years. I think he had 10, and then he dropped down to quite a bit less the next 2 years. What do you think's happened there?
You know, I think a little bit of everything. You know, maybe he hasn't played as consistently as he did 2 years ago. Probably a little bit more zone defense. So, you know, probably, you know, a few factors go into that. And for us, he doesn't have to have 10 interceptions to have a great year. He just needs to do, you know, what the coaches ask him. And again, we think for what we play, for the most part, defensively, that plays to his strength. And, again, we need depth at that position. So over the course of the season, they're all going to play. But even to win our division, and I appreciate what Bonnie said a few minutes ago, but to win our division, you know, we're going to have to beat New England consistently. They have a lot of weapons in their passing game. You know, you just look all around, you know, our conference, there's a lot of prolific passers and a lot of good receivers. And, you know, you look at the playoff games, you know, it's Carson Palmer, it's, you know, right on down the line, Phillip Rivers and Peyton Manning. Those are the types of players we're going to be playing against. So depth at that position is critical.
And Cromartie, by the way, for all you fans, has three interceptions in the regular season against Peyton Manning and one in the postseason. So that has to be something to be considered. Let's talk about Thomas Jones, Mike. Obviously a great player for you, a really good signing when you made that deal, and he gave you three pretty good years, a career-high 1,400 yards. And I know this is a cold, hard business and a part of the business that I don't like, and I'm sure you don't either. How tough was it to release Thomas Jones?
Really hard, Mike. And, you know, in this job, sometimes you have to make, you know, what are hard decisions, not the easy ones. Personally, there's no one I respect any more than TJ. And he's really, obviously what he's done on the field, like you said, the 1,400 yards, the touchdown production, but really it's more of what he did in our locker room and off the field, you know, that I'll miss. But, you know, those are the tough decisions we have to make. I'm sure he'll be productive out there, but we just felt like that was in the best interest of the organization.
Now, let me ask you this, though, Mike, because I've been saying it during the week, and I don't hide behind words when somebody comes on. I mean, this is an uncapped year. If you guys like Thomas Jones so much, what would be the big deal if you paid $5.8 million for your running back next year?
Well, you know, we still have to make, you know, value judgments, and we have to work within, you know, limitations that we have from a standpoint of, you know, we still have budgets at the end of the day, and we have to, you know, really maximize those opportunities and try to be as efficient as possible. And, you know, a lot of factors go into it, you know, where a player is, his age, is he ascending, is he declining, salary. There's a lot of different factors. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm held accountable to take all the variables and then make the decision for the team. And, again, that was a hard decision. But it's really for all those reasons, not just any one particular reason that we made that decision.
All right, tell me how you guys are going to operate in an uncapped year, Mike. A lot of teams are saying they're going to operate like there's a cap. They don't want to just blow it out of the water and get whatever they could. Now, you've got a little bit of a hamstring going on because you can't go out and sign free agents the way you could if you didn't make the playoffs. So how will your team operate without a cap?
Well, you know, we're one day into it, so, you know, we're prepared, looking for opportunities. Again, we're going to have, you know, an expectations of where we're going to be economically at the end of the year. So, you know, Rex and I look at different, like, for example, you look yesterday, Laverne Scholes and Chris Baker get cut, you know, two former Jets, and, you know, I don't think anyone saw that coming. So I think things are going to happen unexpectedly, and I just want to put ourselves in a position that when we feel like there's the right player, at, you know, and at the right fit, at the right cost, that we can take advantage of those opportunities. So it's really a wait and see in the marketplace. You know, today was day one, and we'll go from there.
Is this like kind of a brave new world that nobody knows exactly how it's going to be played, Mike? Or, I mean, you have no idea if you sign somebody now, how much it's going to, if there's going to be a cap the year after the uncapped year. I mean, are you kind of flying blind?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I started in this business as a intern for the New Orleans Saints in 1994, which was just starting the salary cap era. And it was really interesting, you know, going back almost 16 years to see the differences now. And it is a brave new world. And, you know, we're just taking it a day at a time. And, again, I'm just trying to make the Jets better. And when we see opportunities, we're going to try to take advantage of it and move quickly because, you know, the opportunities are going to be few and far between for us.
All right. Now, just getting back to Thomas Jones again, Mike, I want to ask you, if Sean Green is your lead running back next year, would you have done your job? Are you happy with that guy as your running back?
Well, I'll say this. I think him, you know, Leon Washington and Chauncey Washington, and Chauncey is a guy that, you know, not a lot of people know a lot about, but, you know, he played with Sanchez at USC, and, you know, Mark signed off on him, and he's going to be back there protecting Mark, so, you know, that's an authentic validation. But if we have a chance to add another running back, we'll certainly take a long look at that. Now, that could be at the 29th pick. It could be someone out there now, or it could be later on. But that's certainly a position we're going to keep a close eye on.
Now, there are a lot of rumors out there, Mike, that you might want to re-sign Thomas Jones. Are you guys talking with him?
Well, you know, I'd say, you know, right now he's looking. I do speak to his agent a lot, Drew Rosenhaus, who, I don't know, seems like he represents half the league at this point. But, you know, I would not say that anything is imminent. I know he's going to explore other opportunities, and that's really where I would leave things. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, Thomas is out there looking at other opportunities that he's, you know, has earned the right to do, and we'll go from there.
I'm curious, Mike, because a lot of GMs throughout sports always tell me this. I wonder if you feel the same way. Building to the point where you are right now to knock on the door is not as tough as making that last step to get to a championship level. Do you think that's going to be true, that this is going to be the toughest moves?
Well, I don't know. I really, like, 1 year at a time, you know, Mike, and I know that's a cliche, but I've been through it before, you know, in 98 where, you know, in the AFC championship game in the next year in the first series, you know, Vinny Testaverde tears his Achilles and he made. So every year is different, and we're just going to try to put the best team on the field this year. I think Cromartie really helps us, especially for the way we want to play defense. And, you know, we're going to be 0-0, and we're going to go from there.
How much work is being put in right now to how you guys are going to attack the draft? Now, obviously, you want to make trades now. Free agents are available, things like that. How much are you concentrating on the draft? Because obviously now your focus shifts a little bit because you have that other cornerback.
Yeah, that's really where our resources are really starting to focus. Just came back from Indianapolis. You know, I think 29 is an intriguing place because, you know, there could be a situation where teams want to come up to the bottom of the first round. Historically, there's usually some trades there. So, again, I just like the flexibility that, you know, if a good trade came along to go up a couple or back a couple spots, Mike, that we can do that and not be beholden to any one position.
I've heard a lot of people say that it's better to have picks in the bottom of the first round because you get better value and you have to spend so much money for a youngster at the top of the first round and you just don't know if they're going to pan out. That could really set you back. Do you agree that there's better value at the bottom of the first?
Yes, I do. And I would like to be drafted down there every year because that means we had good years before.
Anything on Kerry Rhodes? There are obviously some rumors about Kerry Rhodes might want to be traded. I don't know if he said, does he want to be traded? What are your thoughts on Kerry?
Yeah, I think Kerry, you know, we expect him to be back. I think this is a really important offseason for him. It's another year in the defense with our coaching staff, and we're looking for Kerry to play, you know, at a level that he hopes and we hope. And this is a really important offseason. We start that in 2 weeks, Mike, and, you know, we expect Kerry to be there.
A couple of injury questions. Number one, how's Mark Sanchez rehabbing from a surgery?
He's doing great. You know, he's been meeting with Coach Kavanaugh and Coach Schottenheimer every day, and he's climbing the walls and drinking Mountain Dew every day and, you know, coming in with that infectious attitude that he has, and he'll be fine.
And also, Leon Washington suffered what was really a very, very bad injury, a debilitating injury, and there's no, I mean, we didn't have a clue back then whether he's going to return anywhere near form of what he once was. What's your take on this, Mike? Do you think he's going to be Leon Washington the way we knew?
Yeah, I would never bet against Leon. You know, you look at his size and the way he pass protects, or the strength in his legs and his ability to break tackles. He's a strong, strong body guy, even though, you know, his height may not look that way. And his strength has really come from a great work ethic. So I would never bet against Leon. I expect him to come back to where he was, and he's really had been working his tail off ever since he got hurt.
His agent said he was kind of miffed the way you guys tendered him, and he said there's only a 50-50 shot that Leon would come back. What's your reaction to what his agent said?
I think that's his opinion. He's certainly entitled to it. He makes his own decisions, and we'll make ours. And, you know, I hope, expect that Leon comes back. But he is a restricted free agent, and he's certainly earned the right to see what's out there as an RFA. And, you know, we'll go from there.
All right, before I let you go, this is obviously a hugely busy time for you. How much sleep do you get now until the draft?
Not much at all. But, Mike, I love what I do. And, we're going back and forth with San Diego all night last night. And, this is really when I feel like I can impact the team and help. And that's my job. And, it's really an exciting time. And, it just starts with, Rex and all the enthusiasm he brings. And, I think it's a great time for an organization moving into our stadium. And, we're really excited.
Very cool, Mike. Thank you for popping on. I know you're busy, as I mentioned, and I hope this deal works out great for you. I'm going to talk to Antonio in just a moment.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for having me.
You're in the middle of the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Michael K. Show. Come to you live from Tampa, Florida, another spring training edition of the Michael K. Show. But today it's been a lot about football because the Jets made a big trade late last night, bringing in cornerback Antonio Cromartie, an unbelievably talented player, and the San Diego Chargers willing to trade him to the New York Jets. We just spoke to Mike Tannenbaum, who really thinks that Cromartie is poised to have a big, big year alongside Darrelle Revis. And we're lucky enough to get Antonio to join us now. Antonio, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing very well. So talk to me. Do you like the fact that you're a New York Jet? What did you think when you heard?
I love the fact that I'm a New York Jet, man. I was excited to hear the news and just be a part of, the number one defense and come in and try to help the best way I can to help the organization out to get where we need to be, and that's in the Super Bowl.
All right, now, Antonio, Mike said that Rex Ryan had spoken to you, and he liked the, what Rex said and what you said to Rex. What was that conversation like? What did he talk about? What did he ask you?
We're both excited, it's just being paired up with Revis, alongside Revis, and, situation that we have there, playing with Revis, him being the number one cornerback in the NFL, and teaming up with him, man, it's just, we both just got excited about it, and, that's what it's really all about, just going out and having fun, having excitement about what we do.
Now, talk to me about Revis. What's your thought on Revis? Do you think he is, in fact, the best cornerback in the league?
Yes, I do. Just hands down. I mean, he's a great, cover guy. Comes up and does everything that you ask him to do. And he's a coach's dream. At a cornerback spot, a guy that you can send a guy on and let him lock down one receiver on one side, let him do what he's supposed to do. And with Coach Ryan's defense, that's exactly what it does. He lets you go out and play football the way you're supposed to go play.
Now, that Ocho Cinco had said that, he didn't want to be stranded on Revis Island. So are we going to have a Cromartie Island on the other side?
Yes. You got two islands joined together with Revis and Cromartie Island.
Now, that Rex Ryan plays a very aggressive defense, and he likes to force the other team into mistakes. So how do you think you fit into the style that Rex plays defensively?
It's a lot of man-to-man defense, and that's what I love. A lot of bump and run and getting up in the receiver face and getting a jam on them, and that's the part I love so much about, playing the defensive back, because I can use my long arms, and get my hands on the receiver. And that's what I love about it. I make the quarterback, throw the ball quicker with the style of defense, that we play, that Coach Ryan calls, and, the defense that he likes to play.
Antonio Cromartie is our guest here on the Michael K. Show, the newest Jet acquired last night for a third-round pick that could go to a second-round pick, and the Jets certainly strengthen an area that they need strengthening in. Now, let me ask you this, Antonio. A couple of years ago, you had a season where you picked off 10, and the last couple of years it's gone downhill on that. What's happened with that?
You know, I mean, there's a lot of changes, getting used to newer systems. You know, I haven't been in three different systems since I've been in the NFL, you know, and my first 2 years were a lot more aggressive, and this past two years, you know, it was a lot more laid back. And in 2008, you know, I was injured the whole entire year with a hip injury.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, this past 2 years, you know, it's been, you know, trying to just get back to form, you know, and this past year to me, coverage-wise, I mean, I may not have the interceptions or anything like that, but overall, I think I had a better year, even though I had a 10-pick season, because I was a lot more inconsistent in 2007 than I was in 2009. But I just feel, you know, that now I'm part of an aggressive defense that plays to, you know, the strength of, you know, me of being a corner. It helps out a lot.
Now, one thing I'm sure that jumped out at the Jets, and you know, we looked up this stat, you have three regular season interceptions against Peyton Manning and one in the playoffs. So why do you torment Peyton so much? I mean, what do you see from him that other people can't see?
Well, you know, the first game that I picked him off three times, you know, that was my first start ever. And I think that they felt like they could go after me. I just, you know, took advantage of that opportunity, you know, that I had. And, you know, and I think that's the biggest thing with any quarterback. If you can take advantage of the opportunities that's in front of you, then you have to. And I think I did that part with picking off Manny four times in two games, you know.
Now, I'm wondering, though, I mean, your first game that you ever start, you pick them off three times, you think, you know, this is easy?
No, it's not easy. You know, I was just having fun.
Right,
I bet. And when you're having fun, everything goes how you want it to go, because you're not really thinking about anything. You're just going out and just playing football how you know the best way you can, and that's exactly what I did. I had a lot of fun in 2007, and 08 I didn't have as much fun because of my injury. You know, it was nagging the whole entire year. 2009, I mean, I don't think I had any fun either, just because, you know, I wanted to, you know, play a different style defense, you know. But, you know, me being the player I am, I just wanted to go out and just play the way the coaches wanted me to play, even if I didn't like it.
Now, let's talk about that, Antonio, because obviously it's something that people talk about with you. And we had a guy on from the San Diego Union, one of the newspapers there, said that Antonio's act was wearing thin in the locker room. Do you buy that? Do you think that your teammates were tired of you?
No. No, I don't think so. I mean, I talk to my teammates almost every day. And I may not talk to all of them, you know. And the biggest person that I really talked to really was Quinn Jammer. He was my mentor, and you know, that's the guy that I always talked to, and he was always the one that made sure I always did the right thing and made sure I always did everything I was supposed to do the right way, you know. And we did have problems, you know, within the locker room. There was a lot of problems within the locker room, but it wasn't concerning towards me or anyone saying I had problems inside the locker room, you know. And I felt like I was a team player, never, you know, mouth off or nothing like that. I just tried to go in and do what I was supposed to do every single day.
Did you want to get out of San Diego, though? Did you ask to get out?
You did. I want to leave. I was unhappy there. I'm gonna be honest. I was unhappy. I think it was for me. I felt like it was time for a change or something. You know, change of scenery, because they wasn't getting the best out of me, and I think it was hurting them and hurting for me. You know, and I just felt like it was a time for a change of scenery.
What made you unhappy, though, Antonio? I'm curious about that. Why weren't you happy there?
I mean, it was just, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, you know, with, you know, a lot of guys, and something that I didn't like. there was stuff going on, you know, with some of the team, with our players and stuff. And I was one of the guys that speak up about it, and that's kind of stuff that made me unhappy or we'll lose somebody, even though I know it's part of the business or anything, you know. And I was just me. I was just sometimes an outspoken guy when I felt like I needed to be. And, you know, it may have bumped heads with some of the guys or with some of the coaches. And, I mean, it makes you unhappy when, you know, you feel like you're not appreciated at the highest, you know, and that's the biggest thing.
Did you get along with North Turner?
Oh, yeah, I did. The man and North always talk. You know, me and Coach Turner always had a conversation every single day. We used to joke around just about, you know, just playing on the offense side of the ball. I used to always go to him since he's been there, you know, and joke around with him trying to get me to play on offense and play receiver on a couple plays. You know, but me and Coach Turner, if I ever had a problem with anything, I could always go to his office because, you know, he always had his office open to, you know, to hear out what I had to say or anybody had to say, you know. And he's a great coach for that. You know, he's a player's coach, you know, a coach's player, or however you want to call it. You know, he was just there, you know, if you needed him, no matter, you know, it can be, you know, late in the morning or late at night, to the point of, you know, you can call to him anytime that you wanted to.
Antonio Cromartie is our guest here on the Michael K Show. A couple of questions more, Antonio. And now you have a year left on your contract. Are you cool with playing out this contract and then negotiating at the end of the season?
Oh yeah, I'm not. That's not a problem to me. You know, the contract stuff is going to handle itself. You know, and for me, I need to do what I need to do on the field standpoint and helping the organization out this year as much as I can. You know, and just play the way that I'm supposed to play. I'm not worried about any contract, any issues, or anything like that. I just want to come into the Jets organization and be a part of this team and get around the fellas and play football.
You got a big personality, Antonio, and I'm thinking to myself, this guy's going to fit New York. Are you excited about being in New York, or would you rather not be in such a big city?
Man, I'm excited. You know, I'm very excited, man. I mean, found out the news, man. I was just, you know, excited. You know, just jumping up and down because I mean, I'm part of a great organization that has a lot of history, and I'm, you know, being part of the number one defense in the NFL. And my job is to come in and do what I'm asked, and, you know, and do as much as I can to help out this team as much as I can when I can.
All right, now, final thing. You played them in the playoffs. They beat you guys. Now you're part of them. Do you think this team is good enough to win a Super Bowl this year?
I think, yes. I definitely think so. And we have everybody from, you know, from the offense standpoint. And, you know, the defense is tremendous, you know, and the way that Coach Ryan and calls the defense and Coach Mike and all the guys call the defense and just, you know, gets the guys going. I mean, and that's what it's all about. They go out and have fun. There's no feel like they have any pressure on them. They just go out and go play football the way they're capable of playing football. And, you know, just having that, you know, that atmosphere of, you know, you have no worries, just go out and go play football the way you're supposed to go play football. You have a lot more, fun. You're not, you know, going out and worried about, you know, if I make a mistake here, what's going to happen or anything here, you know. And it's just, that's what it's really all about. You got to go out and have fun when you're playing football because it's the same game that we have played since we was, you know, 5 years old, and nothing has really changed. You know, and this team here, I mean, it's just, the sky's the limit, you know. And as we all do our part, and at the end of the day, I think this team will win a Super Bowl.
And I'll tell you what, so it sounds like you want to have fun on Cromartie Island, but the wide receivers won't. That's pretty accurate, right?
That's definitely accurate. accurate.
Congratulations on the trade, Antonio. Thank you for popping on the show with us, and I hope we get the chance to talk to you throughout the season.
All right, thank you.
Ready to take with you anywhere. It's the Michael K. Show podcast.
Welcome back. back to the Michael Kay Show. Don LaGreca and Bonnie Bernstein taking up until 6:30. Then it's Knicks basketball. Knicks in Toronto to take on the Raptors. New York baseball tonight at 6. Mike Tannenbaum, general manager of the Jets at 5. Michael will join us as soon as the Yankee game is over. We're talking some Met baseball with one of the Mets' newest transactions. That, of course, is Rod Barajas, and he joins us here on 1050. Rod, it's Don LaGreca and Bonnie Bernstein. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Congratulations on the move over to New York, and tell us how the experience has been so far over the last week or so.
Well, it's been great. You know, the guys have been awesome. You know, I feel welcomed here. You know, when you got a good group of guys, it makes that transition so much easier. So things have been going great. You know, I'm getting myself ready and, you know, excited about this year.
Now, you come over to a team that had 92 losses last year. A lot of that was because of injury. How do you look at this team now that they're starting to get healthier people back? What was your perception coming into the Mets after what you saw last year?
Well, you know, last year was a fluke. I mean, this is a team that's built to win. And when you go through what they went through last year, I mean, you expect something, you know, bad's going to happen. So, you know, going into it this year, you know, a lot of teams thought that, you know, the Mets last year were going to be you know, right in it to the end, and you know, getting guys healthy, you know, it's pretty much the same team. You know, there's, you know, a couple changes, but not much. So, you know, I feel like if we can you know, stay healthy and play baseball like, you know, everybody has in the past, I think we should be in good shape.
I'm sure you knew what you were getting yourself into with the glut of backstops that this team has. Rod, what kind of sense from management did you get in terms of what your role could be here if all went well for you in spring training?
Well, you know, it was, you know, they wanted somebody who could, you know, work with their young pitchers, somebody who was solid defensively, and that was their main priority. And I felt like, you know, I brought both of those to the table. So as long as I came into camp, stayed healthy, and you know, do what I do well, you know, there was a, you know, a pretty good chance that I was going to, you know, be the starting catcher for the Mets this year.
Rod, I wouldn't consider you a home run hitter, but you're someone that has gotten a hold of a few. You did hit 21 home runs in your career one year. Are you intimidated at all by what you've heard about Citi Field?
Not at all. You know, until you actually get out there and play, you have no idea what's going to happen. You know, I've gone to certain stadiums where people say that, you know, the ball doesn't carry there at all. And, you know, we go in there and, you know, whatever team I'm on, we go out and we have a, you know, a pretty good series with power. And there's times where, you know, it's the opposite. You know, it's a big park, and if for some reason the ball's carrying out that day. But, you know, I can't listen to what other people are saying and talking about the field. You know, you just go out, you got to go out there and play. You know, home runs, you know, if they come, they come. But, you know, I just want to be productive, driving in runs, you know, trying to, you know, give my team a, you know, a little bit of help, you know, down at the bottom of the order. So, you know, not worried at all, just, you know, excited to go out there and see that beautiful stadium.
With as physically demanding as it is to be a catcher, Rod, how much do you think it helps you that there have only been 4 seasons throughout your career, and you're 34 now, where you've played more than 100 games?
It definitely helps. You know, I've had quite a few years where whether I, you know, backed up and didn't get, you know, the game, the wear and tear that, you know, guys who've caught in for 9 years as a starter and do get over 100 and 120 games every single year. So I think that's definitely kept me, you know, a little fresher than most guys my age who have played every day. You know, physically, I've you know, I feel great. You know, I'm not a guy who spends a lot of time on the DL. You know, I'm just, you know, I think it's a good fit. You know, I think, you know, you know, I'm 34 years old, but I feel like I'm a lot younger than that in baseball age-wise because of, you know, the reason that I haven't been the guy who has been out there year in and year out and abusing their body.
Talking to Rod Barajas, catcher of the New York Mets here on 1050 ESPN New York. It's all about pitching to me, Rod. Tell us what your initial impression is of this pitching staff.
They're pretty darn good. You know, I, you know, the first day I went out there and, you know, Mish had a great outing. He went out there and did his thing. You know, we didn't give up any runs in 5 innings. Today, you know, the two arms that I saw, those guys are special. You know, Nice and then you have, you know, the young guy. I mean, I forgot what his name is.
Niebe?
I'm still new in camp, so I'm still trying to round up all the names. And, you know, they both went out there, and they both were impressive. I know it's early in camp. The hitters aren't quite, you know, up to speed yet, but, you know, the stuff that they showed today, you know, they can get people out, whether it's in, you know, March or April or June. You know, they have good enough stuff to pitch at this level.
And just watching the guys, and you'll hear a lot of times people say, wow, in watching them day to day, there are things I didn't realize. Is there a particular pitcher you can say that about who you've had a chance to see for the Mets?
Well, the two guys I saw pitch today, you know, I don't know much about them. You know, I'm still getting my feet wet also. I'm trying to catch as many bullpens as I can and trying to see as many guys as I can, but, you know, it's going to be a process for me to get to know everybody. But you know, the two guys I saw today, they have really, really good stuff. And you know, when you've been catching as long as I have and seen the amount of quality pitches that I've seen, I know when somebody has, you know, that potential. And these two guys today, I mean, they went out there, located their pitches. They have tremendous arms, and they have the ability to get a lot of outs, and that's what we need. We need outs.
How much have you seen of Mejia? Because Daryl Strawberry was talking about how he could be the next Mariano Rivera. Have you gotten a chance to really see him, and do you agree with Strawberry's assessment?
Well, you know, it's hard to compare anybody to Mariano Rivera. He's one of the best ever. But, you know, today was the first time I actually caught him. I saw him throwing on the side one day, and it was nice and easy. I mean, the ball just explodes out of his hand. It's like he's not giving you much effort, but, you know, when he lets go of that ball, it's hard and it's heavy and it's got a lot of movement. You know, he went out there and he didn't even break a sweat. You know, he went out there and just did his thing, threw strikes, made these guys swing the bat. And you know, when you have that kind of movement, that kind of velocity, and the composure that he showed today, you know, he has the capability of being somebody really, really special.
As the new guy in town dealing with a crop of totally new pitchers, what's the workload like for you to get to the point where you're comfortable with them in every scenario and you can call a good game for them?
Well, it's definitely going to take all of camp. You know, I've done this a few times. We're switching teams, and you know, and it's my job to get to know the new pitchers. So, and I know from those experiences that it's going to take a while. I'm not going into it saying, hey, if I catch these guys one time, I'm going to know what they have. That's definitely not the case. You know, but you know, it's going to be the combination of me catching them, me talking to the pitching coach, me talking to the other catchers, and just trying to, you know, just communication, you know, trying to get as much information as I can from everybody that's had an opportunity to see them, you know, bat against them or coach them. So it's definitely going to be a process, and you know, from my prior knowledge, I should be ready to go by the end of camp.
Rod, Oli Perez really had a waste of a season last year because of injury, and a lot of it was blamed on the WBC. You caught him in the World Baseball Classic. Do you think that the WBC may have affected him adversely going into the 2009 season?
It definitely could have. When you go into the WBC and you know, it's still early March, and you're expected to go out there and pitch for your country, you're going to try to do a little bit more than what you should be doing at that point of spring training. So, you know, these guys are out there. They're giving, you know, that extra effort that they would during the regular season, but they're doing it, and their bodies aren't quite ready. So I definitely think that can take a toll, especially on pitchers. You know, as hitters, it's see the ball, hit the ball. But pitchers, it's max effort, you know, every single pitch. And with his style, I mean, he goes up there and he slings it. And being as competitive as he was that early in camp, it definitely could have hurt him, worked against him, and that definitely could be a reason why he wasn't as effective last year.
Well, one of your battery mates the last couple of years is switched teams, and he's now going to be somebody you have to hit against. So what's the advantage for you having the chance to see Roy Halladay in the light that you have the last couple of years when you're up at the plate against him?
Well, I mean, you still have to hit the ball, even though I've been catching him, and this guy doesn't throw anything straight. He has pinpoint location. He doesn't make too many mistakes, and you know, that's what you have to do to be successful. It's limit the mistakes, and he definitely does that. He has the velocity, the movement, he has the breaking pitches, and he has the composure. You know, he works harder than anybody I've ever seen in baseball. You know, whether it's video work in the weight room, he goes after it, like I said, like nobody I've ever seen. So you know, it's still going to be tough. I do kind of know, you know, what he likes to do. I know how, not how he thinks, but I know, you know, what his out pitches, what he goes to in certain situations. So that's definitely going to be something that, you know, for myself, you know, it's going to help me out. But, you know, for me being able to talk to the other hitters, talk to, you know, Hojo and let him know what I remember from the year past, I think it's definitely going to help out. But the bottom line, he's not going to make the mistakes, and you're going to have to, you know, go out there and try to perform and try to, you know, do something against one of the best pitchers in baseball.
How beneficial you think the switch from AL to NL will be for him?
Well, he, like I said, he does so much work. I mean, video-wise, and, you know, this guy's going to succeed. It doesn't matter what level he plays on, what league, he's going to have success. So, you know, he's definitely going to go out there. He's definitely going to pitch well. He's definitely going to, you know, have more wins than losses. To say how good he's going to do, you know, nobody knows. But, you know, if you look at, you know, numbers from last year, guys that went from the American League to the National League, their ERA went down tremendously. So, you know, that being said, you know, there's a good chance that he's going to be better than he was before. That's scary.
Talking to Rod Barajas of the New York Mets here on 1050 ESPN New York. Big news out of Mets camp was Jose Reyes going back to New York because of a thyroid issue. How taken aback was the clubhouse by having him in the lineup at one moment and then finding out something's wrong and him going back to New York?
Well, you know what? Nobody had really talked about it. We saw that he'd been out of the lineup, and, you know, being the new guys, I'm not going to go around poking around asking questions. And, you know, I just heard, you know, a little bit ago the issues that he has. You know, it's you know, the player's health is always the number one priority. You know, you want to make sure, you know, the tests, you know, whatever tests he got done, whatever tests show that, you know, the issue that he had, you want to make sure that's taken care of. You know, that's the main goal. You know, the good thing, it's not his hamstring, it's nothing physical. You know, once he gets the okay, he gets, you know, whatever he needs to get taken care of. We know he's going to be back here, and he's going to be a huge part of this team. So, you know, we'd love to have him here, but we want to make sure he's good to go health-wise. So, you know, we're just looking forward to getting back.
I know you've bounced around a little bit, but there's got to be, like, this moment of trepidation or curiosity the first time you walk into a new clubhouse. What perception did you get the first time you walked in there?
Well, everybody was laughing. Everybody was having fun. You know, I heard about, you know, the, I guess you could say, the misery that it was last year, how people...
Were you worried about that?
Well, no, I wouldn't say I was worried about that. You know, you hear secondhand, you hear from radio, you hear from TV about how bad things are, and, you know, you want to see it firsthand. You want to see what it's like. You know, word of mouth, people change things, people make bigger deals out of things than what they are. So I was just coming into camp and just, you know, there's some guys that I knew, so I was looking forward to seeing them, and it's just kind of getting a feel. And, you know, from day one, everybody was nice and loose, everybody was having fun. You know, I didn't feel anything, any kind of negative energy at all. You know, I felt like everybody wanted to be there, and everybody, you know, had a goal in mind, you know, turning around what happened last year and going out there and having success and trying to do something special this year.
Rod, a couple of times in the interview you alluded to being the new guy and kind of just knowing your role early. But you're a veteran. You've been in this league before. Are you comfortable that once you get to know everybody that you can become a leader on this team?
Absolutely. You know, the last thing I want to do is to come into a new team and try to take that leadership role right away. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to get a feel for the guys. You want to just kind of know. You don't like people coming in and trying to say, hey, this is my team. You know, I'm the catcher, and this is how we're going to do it. You know, I want to blend in. You know, that's always the first thing, is blending in, getting to know the guys, getting to know personalities. And as time goes by, you know, you put your input. You know, we have meetings. You go out, you stand up, you speak up, and you just talk about your past experiences and how you've dealt with things. So along those lines, definitely, I think the more comfortable I get, the more I get to know these guys, the more I'm around them, I'm going to feel a lot more comfortable, and I definitely want to be one of those guys who steps up when it needs to. So I'm looking forward to it, and like you said, I've been playing this game for a little while, so, you know, I think I've earned, you know, that right to, you know, put my get my input out there and just kind of, you know, be a part of this team and and work from there.
All right, so let me throw this scenario out. First time you're catching Santana in a game, and you're behind, and he's shaking you off, and you still don't really know each other that well. How do you handle that situation when you got a two-time Cy Young Award winner on the mound and you haven't quite gelled just yet?
Well, it's all about communicating, and, you know, that's the biggest thing in any part of life. It's communication. It's talking to guys and getting to know what they're thinking, you know, because I'm going to think a certain way, and there's a chance he's going to think differently. So once that inning's over, I'm going to sit down next to him and say, hey, you know, what were you thinking there? Why did you want to go with this, and how come you didn't want to go with that? You know, it's just it's being men. You know, it's just being able to sit down and have a conversation with somebody and not feel like, you know, they're shaking you off and they're disrespecting you or thinking that you're not, you know, smart enough to call a game. And I'm not going to feel the same way towards whoever it is pitching, thinking that, you know, I'm smarter than him. He should be following me. I'm not that type of player, you know, especially with a guy like Johan Santana. He's been doing it for a long time. He's been doing it, you know, unbelievably well. So, you know, I'd never second guess him. I'd never, you know, take things to heart with him because he's done it. He's been there. He's done it. He's had success. So, obviously, what he was thinking, it's probably worked for him in the past.
You've had some tremendous battery mates. You know, you look at 2001. You know, Curt Schilling was on that team, and Randy Johnson. Where does Santana rank among the better pitchers you've had to catch?
Well, you know, it's still early, but you know, I'm sure once it's done and over with, he's going to be up there with those two guys with Roy Halladay. You know, until you have a chance to sit back there, work with them, and see what they're capable of doing, you know, you're just going to have to, you know, just wait. You know, I think he's going to be, you know, like I said, he's going to be right up there with them. He's had success. He's won Cy Young. He's done it. He's been doing it for such a long time at such a high level. You know, but by the time the season's over, I'm sure I'm going to say, hey, you know, he's in the top four, and you know that top four is a pretty special four.
Rod, this was a pleasure for us. Best of luck this season. We'll be watching.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rod.
All right, Rod Barajas. I want him to be a leader on this team because the team lacks leadership.
See, that's what I wanted to ask him. Shoot, that's what I forgot. Because it's, you know, it's interesting when you walk into a clubhouse, you want to scope it all out and see who the leaders are. And I kind of wonder what his impressions are.
Well, he made, you know, no bones about the fact that he's new, he's not going to step on any toes, and he's just getting to know everybody. But I want him to be a leader. He was on that 0-1 championship team with the Diamondbacks. He was on the Philly team in 2007 and won the National League East. So he's been on winning teams. He's been on championship-caliber teams. So he's been in this league now. This is his debut was 99. This is his 12th year in Major League Baseball. So whatever experience he can lay onto that pitching staff, on the rest of the catchers, rest of that team, I think it's going to be desperately needed.
Well, you want him to be a leader, but more important than that, he has to have command and respect from the pitching staff. And that's why I asked him about Santana, because I would have to imagine, you know, even though he's caught guys who've won Cy Youngs before, it takes a while. And if you find yourself in that situation where he's shaking you off, you're trailing, you're not quite sure that you say, look, let me call the game, trust me. Like, how do you say that to a guy like Santana if you don't have that level of confidence and you don't carry this aura about you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
This has been the Michael K. Show podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.